Welcome to the debate. Today, we're looking at a newly published comprehensive medical and legal guide detailing the origins, symptoms, and recourse for patients facing mesothelioma, which is, you know, this rare, highly aggressive cancer that attacks the mesothelium.
Right. The thin protective lining surrounding internal organs, like the lungs and the abdomen.
Exactly. And well, when we usually talk about a major health crisis, we tend to think of it as a force of nature, like a virus that mutates unexpectedly, or just a genetic lottery that unfortunately draws the wrong numbers. But this source material really shatters that natural paradigm.
It really does. It presents this tragic duality. Because, I mean, while the origins may be man-made, the execution of the disease is the absolute definition of a biological ambush.
Yeah.
It's this microscopic invasion that goes completely undetected by the human body for decades, right until it's far too late.
Which establishes a central question we are tackling today. When analyzing the crises of mesothelioma, should our primary focus be on the unprecedented legal and ethical framework of accountability, given that, you know, this is an entirely preventable man-made disaster? Or must we primarily understand it through the lens of its clinical and biological stealth, meaning the unique diagnostic hurdles and the pathological complexity it presents?
Right. I will argue that mesothelioma is fundamentally a crisis of corporate negligence requiring legal and financial remedy.
And I will argue that its defining characteristic is actually the unparalleled medical and diagnostic challenge it presents, both to the human body at a cellular level and, frankly, to our healthcare system as a whole. Let me begin by laying out the sheer scale of the preventability we're talking about here, because the defining trait of mesothelioma isn't just its lethality. It's the fact that it is a manufactured epidemic.
Manufactured, yeah.
Right. Unlike the vast majority of cancers where oncologists discuss complex webs of, you know, genetic predisposition or dietary habits or environmental luck, mesothelioma has one dominant, thoroughly established cause, which is exposure to asbestos.
Which is a highly specific, singular origin point. That alone makes it a huge anomaly in oncology.
Exactly. A highly specific origin point that was heavily, heavily industrialized. I mean, the American Cancer Society notes that approximately 3,000 Americans are diagnosed each year.
Which sounds small compared to breast or prostate cancer.
It does sound small, but the United States maintains one of the highest rates of mesothelioma globally. And if you want to know why, you just have to look at our 20th century industrial reliance on asbestos. I mean, we mined it, we milled it, we packed it into the hulls of naval ships.
Construction, too.
Oh, everywhere. The infrastructure of steel manufacturing plants, the walls of residential construction. This naturally occurring mineral was utilized on a massive scale despite industry knowledge of its dangers. So, because corporations knew these microscopic fibers were hazardous, but continued to embed them into our infrastructure for profit, well, the ultimate framework for addressing this disease has to be legal accountability.
I see where you're coming from.
We're talking about personal injury suits, wrongful death claims, specialized VA benefits for exposed veterans. The disease is simply the physical manifestation of an ethical failure.
Well, look, I come at it from a completely different way. Because viewing mesothelioma primarily as a legal problem or an ethical failure, I think it severely obscures the sheer biological terror of the disease itself.
How so?
The true crisis doesn't live in a courtroom. It lives in the microscopic mechanism of the fibers. You know, when asbestos-containing materials are disturbed, they release tiny, invisible fibers into the air. And the tragedy is what happens next. The human respiratory system is generally brilliant at filtering out foreign particles, right?
Sure, we cough out dust, stuff like that.
Exactly. We cough out dust, our mucous membranes trap pollutants, but asbestos fibers possess a very specific aerodynamic size and a crystalline durability that allows them to bypass all of those natural defenses. They're inhaled, they travel deep into the lowest parts of the lungs, and they pierce the pleura, which is the lining of the lung.
I get that, but you are decoupling that biological mechanism from the environment that forced it upon the victim. Look at the systemic, industrial footprint of the disease outlined in the material.
The map of cases, you mean?
Yes, it clusters heavily in very specific geographic areas. We see significant concentrated caseloads in states like California, Texas, Florida, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio. This isn't random biological bad luck. This is a map of our nation's liability.
Okay, fair.
California and Florida represent the massive naval shipbuilding efforts of the mid-20th century. Pennsylvania and Ohio represent the steel manufacturing and heavy industry hubs. The geography itself screams corporate liability.
Look, the industrial map certainly overlays the diagnostic map. I don't dispute that at all. But shifting the focus entirely to where the exposure happened, it ignores the horrific mechanical reality of how it happens at a cellular level.
But the cellular level is just the...
Wait, hear me out. If you're wondering how a microscopic rock causes cancer, you really have to look at the immune system's failure to process it. Think of an asbestos fiber not as dust, but as a microscopic fishhook.
A fishhook?
Yeah. When a foreign body enters the lungs, our immune system sends out macrophage cells to swallow and digest the invader. That's standard. But because asbestos is incredibly durable, the macrophage cannot break it down. Instead, the macrophage is impaled by the fishhook.
Wow.
It is. The immune cell dies. It releases enzymes and inflammatory chemicals that scar the surrounding tissue. Then another macrophage arrives, tries to eat the fiber, and suffers the exact same fate. This creates a relentless, decades-long cycle of chronic inflammation and DNA damage that eventually ferments into a tumor. The tragedy is the biological permanence of that fiber.
I see why you focus on the cellular level, I do. But think of asbestos like a highly regulated explosive, okay? The biological mechanism is just the detonation. The true crisis is that the explosive was knowingly installed in the walls of our ships and factories. The fault lies with the architects, not the blast radius.
That's a clever analogy, but...
We cannot become so fascinated by the chemistry of the explosion that we forget who lit the fuse. And to further prove my point about liability over biology, look at the insidious nature of secondary or take-home exposure.
Ah, yes. The spouses.
Yes, we have women who never stepped foot in a shipyard contracting this highly aggressive cancer. How? Because they were shaking out the dusty work clothes of their spouses in the laundry room. The asbestos fibers were brought home, invading the domestic sphere. This utterly shatters that old corporate defense of, you know, assumed workplace risk.
Right, they couldn't claim the wife accepted the risk.
Exactly. The victim wasn't a worker who supposedly accepted the hazards of heavy industry. It was a spouse doing laundry. That is a fundamental failure of environmental safety that absolutely demands a legal reckoning.
That secondary exposure is devastating. But when the explosion happens 40 years after the fuse is lit in that laundry room, the person trying to put out the fire is the oncologist, not the attorney. And that brings us to the latency period, which is perhaps the most defining and challenging feature of mesothelioma.
The timeline is incredible.
Astonishingly long. The gap between that initial exposure and the development of the cancer is huge. We are looking at patients who are almost universally diagnosed in their 60s, 70s, or even 80s.
Right, decades after they have left the workforce.
Precisely why the clinical hurdle is the true crux of the issue. When the silence finally breaks after 40 years, the disease doesn't announce itself clearly. Its biological design is to hide in plain sight until it is virtually untreatable. Let's look at how pleural mesothelioma, the most common form affecting the lung lining, presents itself.
It mimics pneumonia, right?
Exactly. The symptoms are shortness of breath, a chronic dry cough, persistent chest pain. To a general practitioner, that looks exactly like pneumonia, or simply the general decline associated with aging.
Just getting older.
Yeah. And if you want to understand why the shortness of breath occurs, you have to look at the mechanism of pleural effusion. The pleura is a two-layered membrane with a small amount of lubricating fluid between the layers, allowing the lungs to expand smoothly.
Okay.
The mesothelioma tumor causes severe inflammation, which leads to a massive overproduction of this fluid. It fills the chest cavity. It essentially wraps the lung in a fluid straitjacket that physically prevents it from inflating.
And peritoneal mesothelioma functions similarly in the abdomen, correct?
It does. It affects the abdominal lining and causes abdominal swelling, changes in bowel habits, unexplained weight loss. That completely mimics irritable bowel syndrome or a dozen other ubiquitous gastrointestinal issues. So, because the symptoms appear gradually and mimic common conditions, the biological reality is that medicine is forced to battle a disease inherently designed to evade early detection.
That is a very compelling outline of the medical struggle. But I would frame the consequences of that timeline entirely differently. Because the exact timeline you just described, that agonizing decades-long latency, is the very reason the legal apparatus had to evolve into something historically unprecedented to address this specific disease. Traditional legal compensation models completely failed these patients.
I imagine standard statutes of limitations would be a significant barrier.
A massive barrier. I mean, in standard personal injury law, the statute of limitations usually starts the moment the injury occurs. If you suffer a workplace injury today, you file a claim today.
Right.
But with mesothelioma, a shipyard worker exposed in 1965 doesn't develop your fluid straitjacket until 2005. The legal system had to universally adopt a discovery rule, meaning the clock for a lawsuit doesn't start until the disease is officially diagnosed. But even that wasn't enough.
Because the companies were gone?
Exactly. By 2005, the company that manufactured the asbestos in 1965 might have filed for bankruptcy specifically to shield itself from the sheer volume of impending litigation.
Creating a scenario where the patient has a diagnosis, but literally no entity left to hold accountable.
Exactly the crisis that births a completely new branch of mass torts resolution. So under Section 524G of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, a unique provision was created. Because these companies went bankrupt under the weight of their asbestos liability, they were legally required to establish trust funds to compensate future victims as a condition of their reorganization. Today, there are more than 60 of these asbestos bankruptcy trusts, holding over $30 billion in combined assets.
$30 billion? Wow.
Over $30 billion. This allows victims to bypass drawn-out traditional litigation and seek compensation from the trust directly. The latency of the disease didn't just cause medical hurdles, it forced the American legal system to construct a permanent, multi-billion-dollar infrastructure to handle the fallout of industrial negligence.
I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, because you are placing the cart miles ahead of the horse. The existence of a $30 billion trust fund means absolutely nothing to a patient who cannot get a definitive diagnosis.
Well,
before a patient or their family can even think about contacting an attorney to tap into those trusts, they must survive a brutal diagnostic gauntlet. The legal remedy is entirely dependent on clearing a medical hurdle that pushes the limits of modern pathology.
Okay, the diagnostic process is undoubtedly rigorous, given how the disease mimics other ailments. I'll grant you that.
It is way more than rigorous. It is an exhausting, invasive maze. Because a disease is so rare, a local hospital is often ill-equipped to identify it. The very first step is finding a specialist. Then comes a process of establishing the medical and work history.
Recalling 40-year-old details?
Right. Trying to remember environmental details from a shipyard or construction site for 40 years prior. Then the imaging tests begin. Chest x-rays, CT scans, MRIs. But here is the critical medical hurdle. Imaging alone cannot diagnose mesothelioma.
Right, it just shows the fluid.
Exactly. A CT scan will show the pleural thickening or the fluid accumulation we discussed, but it cannot differentiate between scar tissue, a benign tumor, or a malignant mesothelioma.
Making a biopsy the mandatory next step, a highly invasive biopsy.
For pleural mesothelioma, this often requires a thoracoscopy. That's where a surgeon makes an incision in the chest wall, collapses the lung slightly, and inserts a camera and surgical tools into the chest cavity to physically cut away a piece of the diseased pleura.
Ugh.
Yeah, for a peritoneal mesothelioma, they perform a laparoscopy into the abdomen, and the medical challenge doesn't even end in an operating room.
It doesn't?
No. Once that tissue is extracted, the pathological complexity is staggering. Mesothelioma cells closely resemble other types of cancer cells, specifically adenocarcinomas, which are common lung cancers. Under a standard microscope, they can look identical.
Oh, wow.
Pathologists are forced to use highly specialized immunohistochemical staining techniques, basically testing the tissue against specific antibody markers just to distinguish it. A patient has to navigate immense physical trauma and rely on cutting-edge cellular pathology just to get a name for what is killing them.
You describe a harrowing, deeply painful medical journey for the patient. And it is. But the ultimate resolution for that family, the way they stabilize their lives after enduring that trauma, remains rooted in the legal framework. I mean, you just walked us through specialized physicians, CT scans, thoracoscopic surgeries, advanced immunohistochemical staining. Do you know what all of that generates aside from a diagnosis?
Debt.
Massive, debilitating medical debt. The financial toxicity of a mesothelioma diagnosis is staggering.
Which obviously compounds the tragedy for families who are already navigating advanced stage cancer.
Which is exactly why the legal framework operates as the ultimate safety net. Because the system recognizes the immense burden placed on these families, the legal infrastructure adapted to democratize access to justice. Attorneys in this specialized field work almost exclusively on a contingency fee basis.
Ah, right.
This is a vital mechanism. It means that the patient pays no upfront fees, no hourly billing, and no legal costs unless the attorney successfully secures compensation from the trust or a jury verdict. Any victim, regardless of whether they have the wealth to fight a massive corporation, can pursue accountability.
So it shifts the financial risk of litigation away from the patient.
It does, completely. And it extends beyond just the bankruptcy trust. For living patients, there are personal injury lawsuits to cover those immediate surgical costs and lost wages. For families whose loved ones were claimed by the disease's rapid progression, there are wrongful death lawsuits to secure their financial future.
Right.
Particularly Navy veterans, who represent a disproportionate number of cases because asbestos was mandated in naval shipbuilding for fireproofing. The legal infrastructure ensures they have access to specialized VA disability benefits and VA healthcare. So the clinical complexity you detailed is undeniably real, but the infrastructure built to support the victims through that complexity is fundamentally legal.
That's an interesting point, though I would counter that the contingency fee doesn't ease the shortness of breath. You know, the trust fund, no matter how well managed, doesn't reverse the pleural effusion or stop the cellular mutation.
Well, no.
The legal system, for all its necessary adaptations, is essentially sweeping up the debris after a biological earthquake. Understanding the clinical nature of this disease, the way it takes a naturally occurring mineral, weaponizes it against the human immune system, and initiates a slow-acting, invisible destruction, that is the only way we can truly grasp the horror of mesothelioma. The courtroom is secondary to the reality of the patient lying in the hospital bed. It is the ultimate medical stealth campaign.
So bringing our discourse to a close today, I maintain that mesothelioma stands as a dark monument to industrial negligence. The defining characteristic of this crisis is the unprecedented legal infrastructure, the $30 billion in specialized trusts, the evolution of the discovery rule, the contingency litigation models that had to be constructed to address an entirely preventable man-made disaster.
And I maintain that the disease is a masterclass in biological stealth, defined by its decades of latency, its ability to perfectly mimic common ailments, and the incredibly invasive, pathologically complex gauntlet required to even identify it.
Yet, I think the source material brings us to a profound point of convergence today. The true tragedy of mesothelioma lies precisely in the intersection of our perspectives.
I completely agree. It is a disease born of widespread human industry, driven by economic expansion, that just so happens to utilize an agonizingly slow and invisible biological mechanism to evade detection until it is far too late.
Looking at this crisis through both the clinical and legal lenses really reveals the full picture. Understanding the intricate, painful diagnostic hurdles, you know, the thoracoscopies and the cellular mimicry, it only makes the fight for a family's eventual justice and financial stability even more poignant.
And recognizing the corporate negligence that caused the exposure, knowing that the fibers were placed there intentionally, it makes the biological suffering in that relentless cycle of cellular inflammation all the more tragic. There is certainly much more to explore in the source material regarding specific legal rights, statutes of limitations, and emerging medical treatments that attempt to fight back against this stealth.
Absolutely. We leave it to you, the listener, to weigh whether the legal accountability or the clinical challenge defines the core of the mesothelioma crisis. Thank you for joining us.
You know, we started today by noting how we usually expect diseases to act like arbitrary forces of nature. But with mesothelioma, we find ourselves analyzing a decades-old crime scene. As you step away today, consider that intersection. What does it mean when the weapon used in the crime is so microscopic and so patient that it waits 50 years to finally leave its fingerprint?